Our scripture this morning is Hebrews 11, verses 1 through 16, and I'm reading from one of Laura's many Bibles. This is the Inclusive Bible, the first egalitarian translation. Faith is the reality of all that is hoped for. Faith is the proof of all that is unseen. Because of faith, our ancestors were approved by God. By faith, we understand that the world was created by the word from God, and that what is visible came into being through the invisible. By faith, Abel offered a better sacrifice to God than Cain, and for that he was declared to be just. God spoke well of his offerings, and by faith, Abel still speaks, even though he is dead. By faith, Enoch was taken up and didn't have to experience death. He was seen no more because God took him. Even before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to God must believe that God exists, rewarding those who earnestly seek the divine glory. By faith, Noah, warned about things not yet seen, revered God and built an ark in order to save his household. By faith, Noah condemned the world and inherited justice which comes through faith. By faith, Sarah and Abraham obeyed when they were called and went out to the place where they were to receive as a heritage. They went forth, moreover, not knowing where they were going. By faith, Sarah and Abraham lived in the promised land as resident aliens, dwelling in tents with their children and grandchildren, who were heirs of the same promise, for they were looking forward to the city with foundations, whose designer and maker is God. By faith, Sarah received the ability to conceive, even though she was past childbearing age, for she thought that the one who had made the promise was worthy of trust. As a result of this faith, there came forth from one woman and one man, themselves as good as dead, descendants as numerous as the stars and the sky and the sands of the seashore. All of them died in faith. They didn't obtain what had been promised, but saw and welcomed it from afar. By acknowledging themselves to be strangers and exiles on earth, they showed that they were looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country from which they had come, they'd have been able to return to it. But by searching for a better country, a heavenly one, so God isn't ashamed of them or ashamed to be called their God. And that's why God has prepared a city for them. These are our sacred stories.
So what do you do? It's a common small talk question. It's how we get to know each other. It partners, where are you from, as a way to move from complete stranger to a stranger with a name, a job, and a hometown. I'm a minister. Sometimes I clarify church minister as a way to distinguish myself from the prime minister and the minister of magic. A minister, really? I confirm, wondering again why anybody would lie about such a thing. And then we move to either where I do this ministry or what kind of minister I am, which I assume means what denominational affiliation rather than quality. What kind of minister are you? Pretty good. I hate small talk, can you tell? Answers are given, leading to more questions, until it comes out that I am your senior minister here on Caroline Street in the Museum District at Covenant Church, an ecumenical, liberal, Baptist congregation. Instead of satisfying the inquisitor, this inevitably leads to more questions, largely focused on either what that means or, my favorite so far, how did that happen? how did that happen? How did this happen? How are we covenant? How am I me? How are you you? How did this happen? In divinity school, I was forced to do a genogram. A genogram is a pictorial display of a person's family, relationships, and medical history. It expands a traditional family tree by displaying hereditary patterns and psychological factors that punctuate relationships, specifically connection and disconnection. I don't know if you're familiar, but I wouldn't necessarily encourage it. Genograms go well beyond the names and geographical information of a typical family tree or socially accepted small talk, and instead they display in the repeating patterns of generations just what you're dealing with in terms of ancestors. I found it alarming. The more time I've spent with Hebrews 11, the more I've wondered if it's not a sort of genogram. These stories of the faithful, they're full of real people. Real people meaning not perfect people. People like Noah, who after all the work of building the ark to shockingly specific specs, I think we're all glad not to have been on that building committee, and then all that work with the animals and the food and then the rain and the rain and the rain, Noah's first order of business upon reaching dry land was to plant a vineyard, make some wine, and get drunk. It's full of people like Abraham. For those of you who don't remember, Abraham was a liar who was willing to kill his own son. And Isaac. Isaac was a liar. He told almost the identical lie to his father. And Jacob. Jacob was a liar and a conniving cheater. And Sarah, you'll remember Sarah and Hagar and Ishmael. Sarah had Hagar, and Hagar and Abraham's son Ishmael sent away, away to what she assumed would be their deaths in the wilderness. These are our spiritual ancestors. Thanks be to God. These are our family of covenant. These people are us. I've heard this chapter of Hebrews called the Hall of Faith. No missing the allusion to Hall of Fame. Excuse me. No missing the allusion to Hall of Fame, but this is not a collection of those famous for their perfection, for their superior righteousness. These people, our spiritual ancestors, they're in some cases more infamous than famous. And yet they all share in the story of faith, the story that continues, the story that we are now writing. These ancestors don't set unachievable ideals, but rather they weave us together, all of us. We are all children of God. We are all part of the story of faith. They weren't perfect, and they were faithful. Noah, before the winery, Noah listened to the voice he understood to be divine, and he built a giant boat when it had never rained. Abraham followed the leading of the divine away from the only land he had ever known to a new land he'd never seen or heard of. Abraham and Sarah welcomed strangers, gave them food and shelter. Isaac never left Canaan. Sometimes our part in the story of God is staying put. Jacob, after cheating his brother Esau out of his birthright and their father's blessing, Jacob, once a grown man, wrestled all night, perhaps with the divine. And the next morning he met with his brother Esau after a long separation. Jacob expected that Esau would want to kill him. But instead, Esau runs to Jacob, kisses him, and they both weep. Later, Jacob tells Esau that seeing Esau's face was like seeing the face of God. Leaving and staying and listening and building, forgiving and seeing God. These are our spiritual ancestors. Thanks be to God. This is our family of covenant. These people are us. This is our story of faith. According to the author of Hebrews, faith is the reality of all that is hoped for. Faith is the proof of all that is unseen. Because of faith, our ancestors were approved by God. Faith is not necessarily an easy word. I think it too often gets confused with belief, but they're not the same. Certainly they're connected, but faith, it seems to me, is so much more than what one believes is true or not. We can be a faithful people with questions and doubts. Faith is living into hope. It's listening for the divine voice. It's welcoming the stranger. It's going or staying where the Spirit leads. It's forgiveness. It's seeing God's face in your brother and your sister, seeing God's face in each person. Last Sunday, Linda Phoenix and I attended a Close the Camps protest at one of the detention centers here in Houston. It was organized by local Jewish congregations. It was held last Sunday to coincide with Tisha B'Av, which is the saddest day in the Jewish calendar. It's a time of fasting, of prayer, of mourning, a time of remembering the destruction of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. Shouting, "Never again is now," with my Jewish brothers and sisters was poignant and painful. When one of the rabbis played the shofar and the sound of the ram's horn reverberated through my bones, I felt the voiceless prayer, the rally cry, the ancient practice connecting us to our ancestors. I felt our faith, our shared faith, our shared hope, our shared determination. As we prepare for communion this day, I want to share with you words written by Rabbi Sharon Cohen Ainsfield, words read and shouted by those gathered last Sunday. We've come here to Emancipation Avenue to say no. To say no to those who would tear children from their parents' arms, to say no to those who are in no rush to reunite them now, to say no to a policy that deprives people of all ages of the basic international human right to seek asylum in our country, to say no to those making our border famous for brutality and heartbreak. But more than that, we are here to say yes. Yes to children and to families. Yes to the sanctity, to the preciousness, to the dignity of all life created in your image. Yes to the breathtaking beauty of our world. And yes to the vital moral fabric of our lives. To those who would tear that fabric apart, we're here to say we will always show up to stitch it back together. We walk in the footsteps of our ancestors who stitched worlds back together, who saw connection everywhere. We know that it's so much easier and faster to tear things apart than it is to stitch them together. But we will keep showing up as long as it takes, because we are parents ourselves, because we are teachers, because we are witnesses, because we are weavers, Because we are threads in the tapestry of our world, we will stitch together what has been torn apart. After these words, the rabbi asked us to repeat after her in prayer, and I'll ask you to do the same. Dear God, give us strength.
Give us wisdom.
Give us courage.
Gather us in the embrace
of your unending love. And then, in a loud, clear voice, she said words that have been repeated for centuries. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Ehad. And she translated the Shema this way. Listen, you who struggle, and bear witness to the one God who holds us all. Listen, you who struggle, and bear witness to the one God who holds us all. These words of here and now, these words of our ancestors, these words prepare us for this sacred ritual, a ritual that connects us to our ancestors and to each other. All are welcome to come and tear bread and dip it in wine or water. You, exactly you, just as you are welcome. Come, you who struggle. Come and bear witness to the one who holds us all. Amen.